The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Development Hell. For every horror title to hit VOD, there are going to be countless others that end up DOA. Development Hell is a podcast dedicated to unearthing these plagued horror productions to find out what went wrong and if they still got a shot at the green light. I am your host, Josh Corngut, and this podcast is brought to you by the Anatomy of a Scream Pod Squad. Anatomy of a Scream are a female-founded, queer-positive horror publication that focus on reviews and analysis from a feminist perspective. Today we're presenting a very special sequel episode to our Freddy vs. Jason episode, which hit earlier this week. For this sequel episode, we're going to have an interview with filmmaker Justin McConnell. Justin is a filmmaker located in Toronto, Canada, whose previous works include Life Changer in 2018, and this year's documentary, Clapboard Jungle, which has played at Fantasia Film Festival, Sitges Film Festival, and a lot of others. Today we're going to be talking to Justin about how he feels about Freddy vs. Jason 2, and to dig into his own personal development hell, to find out if there are any projects that he had to leave behind, and if there are any dream projects that could be waiting for him in the future. All right, thank you for listening, and enjoy this interview with Justin. So how are you doing in this pandemic right now?
I oscillate between losing my mind and, you know, keeping it together, like a lot of us do. but the reality of it is that it's a tough year for everybody. And the perspective of that kind of puts me in a mindset that so many people have it even worse. And this is like a huge human-based worldwide period of strife. In that, I've realized that, you know, I've had to strip back a lot of the things I do in my life. I spend most of my time at home now, but I've tried to keep creative through the whole process. You know, I even had a feature film that is doing festivals right now and is out on release in various places. And I haven't had a time to really stop and not continue to work and create and do things. So I've been really, really lucky in that way, in that I've been able to keep my mind occupied enough that it isn't just crushing boredom and you know, waiting for all of this to end. I've been proactively trying to keep myself, even if it's just from within my apartment for the most part. But I also, you know, we have endless entertainment options these days, right? So I've got a massive video collection. I've got all the streaming services and, you know, PlayStation VR and books. And
me too.
It's hard to be bored when you're surrounded by the media that exists now.
What are you watching? What are you watching, like, currently?
Oh, Jesus, dude. It's a long list.
Highlights.
Let's see. Really liking Lovecraft Country. I watch lots of horror anyway, but I'm doing the at least one horror movie a day thing for October because it's just a fun way to pass time. So that list is incredibly long. already. Okay. I've been watching a lot of weird cartoons, like Tig Tone, which is an Adult Swim series that's just probably the most insane writing I've seen on anything, let alone an Adult Swim series. Primal, this other animated series that's like a Living Frazetta painting. I'm rewatching Over the Garden Wall, which is like a really good Halloween spooky themed. It's for kids, but it talks metaphysics and you know your place in existence and things like that. It's for kids, but it's written so that adults can take something from it too. But like the horror stuff this month, I'm bouncing all over the place. I'll watch like Possession from 1981, 1980. One day, and then the next day, I'm watching Ernest Scared Stupid. So it's like...
I feel like Ernest is Scared Stupid is having a bit of a renaissance this year. I keep seeing things about it.
It's always been one of my favorite Halloween movies.
I've never seen an Ernest movie. The video boxes like really gave me like a weird feeling when I was five. And since then, it's like, it's like Uncanny Valley stuff in my heart, and I can't approach it. But
maybe
one day.
I would say if you're gonna approach any of them though, you might as well start with Ernest Scared Stupid.
Oh, it has to be.
Have you seen Killer Clowns from Outer Space?
You know what? Not that long ago, but yes, I have.
Okay,
I was surprisingly scared by that.
So the people who directed that, the Chiodo brothers, did all the effects for Ernest Scared Stupid. So all the trolls are Chiodo brother puppets.
Okay, and, so that explains my uneasiness.
Yeah. But they also, because they had limited budget, there's a few background trolls that are just repainted killer clowns.
Oh, I love that.
You can pick out, you'd be like, oh, there's a killer clown. But
okay. Are these the guys that did Critters 2? I feel like I saw an interview with them at one point, and they seem nuts.
I think that Chiodo's worked on Critters for a bit. I know Chris Wallace did. Chris Wallace did Gremlins. I'm pretty sure that the Chiodo's worked on one of the Critters. Maybe the first.
And I have never seen them, actually. Wow. I've never seen a Critters movie. I have to. And
those like, for sure.
You show now, and there's like, Critters won't die. I've also never seen Ghoulies, which I almost am more interested in.
Definitely the first two.
As the underdog, yeah.
Definitely the first two are worth watching. For what, like, if you like little monsters and little puppets,
you know who does little monsters as well as Guillermo del Toro?
Oh, yeah.
Like the little tiny monsters that, like, with the teeth and the crap. Did you ever see, what was that one he produced when he didn't direct? Don't Be Afraid of the Dark.
Oh, yeah. The Troy Nixie movie. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was very surprised that was a bunch of little monsters at the end of the day.
No, it was super cool. The original was kind of little creatures, too.
Oh, yeah. I've never seen, it's still mind blowing that he remade. Was it a direct to TV movie from the 80s?
Yeah, it was a TV movie.
This is very cool.
That's a different world back then, though. TV movies were, you know, there was technically Salem's Lot's a TV movie.
Initially. Oh, of course. Like, I've never been able to get through the whole thing. and to end off my tirade about little monsters, was it Hellboy 2 that he did it really?
Yeah, they had the little tooth fairies and stuff like that.
I love that.
I'm partial to those, but I prefer the like tactile puppet little monsters, you know?
Okay, yeah. A trilogy of terror? Like,
yeah, the Zuni fetish doll for sure. Just, yeah, something that you know is there on set in some way. That's why I like the Chucky series so much. Amount of puppeteering and work that goes into those movies. I mean, there's lots of other reasons to like it.
Oh, they're incredible. I'm going to say, maybe I need to rewatch them, but I feel like Curse of Chucky is my favorite as of right now.
It's good.
As of today. It's scary. I was like, they made it scary again. I loved it.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a lot to talk about with that series.
And for sure.
It kind of ties into Freddy versus Jason.
It does. We're going to get to Freddy versus Jason. But before then, I want to ask. So you've had a feature in the film festival circuit this year, which is really, really exciting and cool. What is it like now, like going through the festival circuit in the age of COVID? Like, is it surprisingly helpful in some ways?
It's pretty surreal. I mean, first of all, I got to ask, can I swear on this podcast? It's pretty fucking surreal.
Yeah.
In a few different ways. The main thing is that there's no more, you don't get a physical premiere, right? Your stuff premieres on a streaming site or on a broadcast television station or something. Like the way my film came out, we played, you know, the first festival we played was Canadian Film Festival, and that was broadcast on Super Channel across Canada, a paid cable station.
Yeah.
So the first time anybody sees my movie, I'm alone in my apartment drinking a scotch or drinking a bourbon or a scotch in my boxers going, well, gee, I hope people liked it. You get no real feedback aside from the odd message through Facebook or, you know, whatever reactions there are on Twitter. So that whole ceremony of a bunch of people gathering together in a theater to usher this thing you've worked so hard on for so many years into reality, and that elation of, like, you get that moment of you've hit this peak, right? And it's you, the feeling that it's totally done. You don't get that with the digital festival. Mm-hmm. So that's a difficult sort of thing, because you don't do it for that. You don't do it for elation. You don't do it for, you know, people walking up to you afterwards, or the crowd reaction or anything like that. All that stuff is kind of gravy, but it's definitely, in my experience, just a really great moment to be in. Like 2 years earlier without COVID, you know, when Life Changer was doing all those festivals and I was able to actually travel with it, that's a whole other ball game, really. That's one side of things. But that festival in particular came with a broadcast sale from Super Channel that pretty much covered the entire budget of the movie out of the first festival. So it's like,
yeah,
in this specific case, it's like you lose some things, but you gain something else because the opportunity was there. And then we did Fantasia and Fright Fest, and it's great. It's playing, and you know, you get your press and you get your feedback. But again, I'm just in my apartment. Like, it's the same. It's playing Sitges right now, which is a festival that I've wanted to go to my entire, like, for the longest time.
That's so
cool.
One of
the most important genre festivals. I'm in my fucking apartment. So you know, I'm doing this great festival tour. I can't go to any of them, you know?
I mean, it saves you the plane ticket to Spain. It saves you
the travel, for sure. But I want to do the travel. But that's a very privileged position to be in. And even the filmmakers who are successful, not all of them get to travel with their stuff. But when the opportunity is there, it's nice. And it's just a little weird to do all of it remotely through screens.
Oh, no, totally.
Even Q&As. It's like, who's tuning into this? I can't really tell because
they are. But you know what? Next time you'll be able to travel, and you may be one of the only cycles that get to experience it like this, hopefully. Yep.
So, well, it's also kind of cool. It's led to further sales, and like some of the festivals do rev share. Uh-huh. I got picked up by I can't talk about it yet, but a pretty major company for a lot of territories, and I think that came out of just because of the scenario we're in right now. It's like,
can you tell us a little bit about the feature that you've got out there right now?
Clapboard Jungle is a survival guide for the modern independent filmmaker is the goal for it. I just starting in 2014. I was in a bit of a slump, and I knew it would be a while before I'd get any other movies made. So what I did was I bought a cheap camera and some audio gear, and I decided to start self-financing and self-shooting a documentary in my spare time. Since I really didn't have time to fully invest and put a ton of money into, like, following around a different subject and anything like that, I went out and collected a ton of interviews over a 4 or 5 year period, and I turned the camera on myself because the point of the documentary was to show the process of how you actually get a movie made. Mm-hmm. So then it was just, you know, collecting footage for years and years and years. And the film itself that's doing the festivals right now is more the emotional side of things. There's definitely lots of information and educational stuff in it, but it's the emotional side. It's you know, how or why you do this and how you stay sane and the kind of reality checks you got to give yourself and the ups and downs. And it's meant to be preparing people for the real world of indie filmmaking, at least from my perspective, or at least from the experiences I've had and the people I've interviewed had. Everybody's experiences are going to be different, but I feel like there's some universal truth to be taken out of what is in the film. But then beyond that, we're working on post-production right now on a TV series version, which I'm not part of the story anymore. It's just the talking heads, and every episode is a specific topic, and it's meant to be like a film school in a box. Cool. So that's kind of what I did. But, you know, at my heart, I make horror movies for the most part. I make other things, but, you know, I'll probably always keep coming back to horror.
I love when people totally accept the fact that they're horror filmmakers, and there's no apologies to be made.
I'll put it this way. Horror is probably going to be my home base, but I am going to take flights out of it from time to time. Have stories that aren't horror that are in me. They're mostly dark and weird, but they're not necessarily horror all the time.
Horror can mean so many things.
Not everything I've made has been horror either, really. Beyond the documentaries, even. Like, Broken was like a drama thriller kind of thing.
Well, I was going to ask you if you consider yourself a genre filmmaker, but I kind of think I get a sense of what you mean by that.
I'm not going to go out and say, like, I'm not just a genre filmmaker, but I definitely think that's what I'm going to be most known for, because it's what I'm going to be focusing on the most. At least at this point, that's the way I see it. I just wouldn't want to go forward and say, oh, I'm horror filmmaker Justin McConnell. It's like,
yeah, Because they will pigeonhole you.
The business will do that because that's what last success was.
Yeah.
It's every, you know, the biggest names in horror, a lot of them got pigeonholed, right? The Music for the Heart.
The Wes Craven. Someone really famous was supposed to be in that I was just reading, and I totally forget. Madonna, maybe? Or yeah, whatever. Yeah,
I think at one point, wasn't she? No, it was like Meryl Streep or something.
Meryl Streep.
Yeah. No, I think she's in it, though. I think Madonna was meant to be. Anyway, I can't remember entirely. But George Romero was trying to get a movie about rhino. Was it rhino or elephant hunting? Anyway, he was trying to get this thing made. Nobody wanted to finance it. You do get pigeonholed.
Okay, really pressing question. If you had to pick Nightmare on Elm Street or Friday the 13th franchise, where do you lie?
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Elm Street?
Yeah.
Thank God. I mean, there's a surprising number of Friday the 13th people out there, but it's got to be Elm Street. The creativity is, it's scary. It holds up in every regard.
I like Friday the 13th. I find that Friday the 13th movies end up spinning their wheels more often. And in terms of rewatch value, the Nightmare on Elm Street movies are just so inventive. I mean, there's parts that aren't as good as others, but even like Dream Child or part two is pretty solid, but like I feel like it's one of the least inventive of them.
For sure.
There was not as much dream stuff in it.
I love Dream Child. I rewatched it not long ago and it's so baddie.
It's fun. They're all fun.
Freddy's Dead. Every time I watch it, I think, how bad can this be?
Yeah.
And then the answer is very, very bad.
Well, I don't even hate. I like all the Freddy movies, but like the thing is, like Friday the 13th, you'd never get a new nightmare out of Friday the 13th because it can't be as it can't be as self-examining as a series as something like Nightmare, where you're dealing with actual levels of reality and the idea of what its storytelling is. And, you know, even the conversation of who would win in a fight, Freddy versus Jason, well, probably Freddy because he's an idea and you can't kill an idea. Uh-huh. Jason's some kind of an entity, whether you go by the Jason Goes to Hell rules, where he's a body jumping little demon monster.
Yeah,
he's just some like unkillable zombie. He'll keep coming back, mm-hmm. but he's a physical entity, and Freddy can live on in one thought.
Freddy doesn't have physics, so I feel like that really gives him a bit of an ump. I want to know what your thoughts on Freddy versus Jason is, but I more so want to ask you, like, do you remember what it was like waiting for that movie to come out? Like, were you feeling the anticipation for that as like a younger person?
Yeah, I was a subscriber to Fangoria, so I they talked about the various incarnations of what could be quite a lot. At the end of Jason Goes to Hell, obviously there's the Freddy glove grabbing the mask and pulling it down. You'd hear about it on and on and on, and then leading up to it, like I knew Ronnie Yu was the director, and mm-hmm. I really liked Bride with White Hair and Bride with White Hair 2, and mm-hmm. What he did with Bride of Chucky. He's really into Bride movies for some reason.
Yeah.
at least those three films. I knew he was going to have an inventive visual style, and it would be a fun film because he just has a really good eye for composition and just for like setting up set pieces and kills. And I don't think he disappointed me leading up to it. I do think there was so much anticipation in the horror community and even myself going into it, expecting it to be, who knows? You're always making the movie. If you're waiting for a movie for a decade, you've already made that movie in your head.
Oh, so for sure.
By the time you go see it, if it's not the movie in your head and you aren't able to detach yourself from the thought pattern that, this isn't what I expected, I could see somebody getting disappointed.
You don't have to answer this, but how old were you when it came out? Do you remember?
2003, so I would have been 21, 22.
All right, so you might have had the ability to sort of gauge what was coming your way a little bit better at that age.
Maybe.
You know, I think I was like 13, and it was like there could not have been a better age for someone to watch that film. So I'm assuming you're familiar with the concept of Freddy versus Jason versus Ash that was floated around.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about that possibility of a sequel? Do you think that could have turned out?
I mean, it would have turned out as a fun exercise in genre mashups, like bashing toys together kind of thing.
Yeah.
The movie or the comic that actually, I think that did happen.
It did.
I'm sure that there's definitely entertainment value to be had there, but in terms of like just trying to understand it as something in canon, it would probably never work. And like Ash, at the end of the day, he kills deadites and stuff, and he kills, he's fucking survives. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how he'd do against an unkillable tank of a human being or like zombie and a dream demon at the same time. Like,
it's a lot. It's a lot to ask. He's been through a lot. Apparently, some of the character archetypes that ended up on Ash versus the Evil Dead were in the treatment for the film, which I think is kind of cool.
I can see that interesting. That could be, yeah.
Did you watch that show?
Oh yeah, I love that series. I kind of wish there was a fourth.
I'm actually happy that it got three seasons. I think that I'm grateful that
the thing happened. Is though, if you in terms of Evil Dead lore, Army of Darkness, the UK ending, the original ending, he oversleeps by 100 years and he wakes up in the post-apocalypse, right? And the whole thing was going to be set up as if there was an Evil Dead 4 based on that ending would have been like a post-apocalyptic Evil Dead, so Mad Max meets Evil Dead. Ugh. And then the third spoilers, by the way, the third season of Ash versus Evil Dead ends with post-apocalyptic Evil Dead.
Oh, so we're never going to get it.
Yeah. Twice they set that up and twice we're not getting it.
That's kind of poetic though.
Yeah.
That's kind of beautiful.
It fits the series. That's for sure. But, well, but I remember seeing that original, cause I bought, again, I subscribed to Fangoria and in the back of Fangoria, there was a Toronto-based VHS seller called Video Vortex that I used to order from, probably in the late 90s. And what they would sell would be bootlegs, but not necessarily, but like dubs, VHS dubs of the uncut international versions of movies that didn't have copyright because they were work prints and unfit. So the first time I saw that original ending of Army of Darkness was on a Japanese VHS bootleg of Captain Supermarket, which is the Japanese title for Army of Darkness. So I read that, I imported this thing, you send away, you wait 6 weeks. You basically fill out a form. You have to call them. They mail you a form. You fill out the form, you mail it to them. And about 6 weeks later, you get your tapes.
It makes it so much better than just being able to go to YouTube.
Oh yeah.
So much more rewarding.
I saw Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer and Brain Dead, which is.
Whoa. Did you know that Henry Portrait of the Serial Killer, the director, I think it's
John Naughton.
Yeah. Did you know he was in serious talks to direct Freddy vs. Jason back in the 90s?
Oh yeah.
Where they were seriously considering making it a courtroom horror movie, where they put Jason on trial for the murders. There's been a number of courtroom Freddy and Jason movies in the pipeline that I don't understand.
They gave us that ending on The Evil Dead and then pulled it away twice.
I didn't even know that existed. I have to find that. I love
it. It's on the newest Scream Factory Army of Darkness Blu-ray has that ending. And I think the bootleg edition, the old DVD that's looks like brown paper, uh-huh. Army of Darkness, that has it as well.
I remember that. I also remember some early DVD edition where they made it look like the Book of the Dead. And I remember being an HMV.
I have that on my shelf for the first DVD. They did it for that too as well, though.
That was so wild. So to shift a little bit, do you have any long-running franchises that you're particularly drawn to in the horror world? Maybe ones that are get a little bit less airtime than Freddy or Jason?
Phantasm. One of the great unmade scripts was the Roger Avery Phantasm script. They just couldn't get the money.
Roger Avery did a Phantasm script.
Yeah, but it was much bigger budget. It would have taken place after Phantasm 4, tiny little bits of ideas for it ended up in Phantasm Ravager. This thing called the Bag Plague, which essentially was a disease that was going around the world. And if you got infected with it, your head swelled up and exploded, and then shrapnel, a piece of your skull, flew and not drove into people all around them, infecting them or killing them. And that was part of the Roger Avery script.
Wow, relatable, actually.
Yeah, exactly. but yeah, Phantasm for sure. I'm pretty partial to the Tremors series, all of them.
They're so good, and they keep coming.
Yeah, they keep, but even the for all the direct-to-video stuff, they've got a pretty consistent quality to them.
I love a quality direct-to-video moment. Yeah. That's why, some of those Wrong Turns do exactly what they're supposed to do.
Some of them, yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Chucky, I mean, I like pretty much.
Oh, those just get better, and here and there. Those are good. Well,
I mean, even the weaker ones of the series are still highly watchable to me.
What are the weaker ones, though? They're just so,
all good. I think part three is a little dry.
Okay, yeah. Part three.
I like it, though. That was the first, I think that was the first Chucky movie I saw as a kid. Mm. And I did like it a lot, but rewatching
it's brutal. There's garbage truck death on that one. Yep. That's that with me.
Oh, it's good. It's just like, I think after how the high of two, which I think is probably the best in the series. I mean, I say this knowing Don Mancini and having met Tom Holland and hoping that they don't hear this podcast and go, wait, you're like two better than one.
Oh, they will. No, they won't.
And I think it's just more the visual style and what Chucky is coalesces much tighter to me in two than part one. But one is, you know, obviously a horror classic.
Oh,
but I just like that every single Chucky movie is the same writer, and they get more and more queer as they go on. They're like the queerest horror series.
By far.
You know, I'm not personally LGBTQ+, but you know, I have to appreciate that how forward thinking they are and how embraced they were by that community. And
yeah, even trans, like they were so early to talk about trans issues. I don't know how, I don't remember if they did it well or not, but I remember being surprised that in 2005 they were doing it.
Oh yeah. Well, that movie, like you can tell the tone of that movie because John Waters is in it and like,
all right.
Like, it's a full on comedy and they knew it. And it's lived on as a cult item. And I just think some movies are ahead of their time and it takes years for them to be properly appreciated.
Oh yeah.
In terms of other franchises though, I'm just trying to think of something a little bit more obscure. I like the whole Dead series a lot. It's not obscure, but the, you know, the George Romero's entire.
Yeah, case. people don't go to it in the same way that we go to some of the other ones.
No, but I think they're headier movies for the most part, and they're not like Dawn of the Dead is a stone cold classic, and so is Night of the Living Dead, and even Day of the Dead to an extent is very very rewatchable, but they're not fun horror movies.
Did I hear they're making a TV series on Day of the Dead?
Well, Steve Kostanski's directing the first four episodes.
Okay, so very cool. I was always surprised they never did much with that in like modern times.
I worked on the second one for a bit before they completely redrafted remake. I was Day of the Dead.
Remember it coming out. I remember people not being kind about it.
Yeah, before the script they went with, I spent a couple months drafting and pitching and talking with Millennium on that project. And I still have the Bible of what my version of it would be. It was basically Snowpiercer, but Day of the Dead. That if I was to mash two things together and explain it.
Did they have the money to do that?
No.
No.
Not really. That was part of the reason. But yeah, the one Steve's doing, from what I can tell, is it all takes the reason it's called Day of the Dead, aside from it being. From what the plot description says, it seems to all take place in 24 hours. So the whole season is like a day, the first day of the dead. Like
living up to its name.
Yeah. So not very similar to the other one, but.
I liked Land of the Dead, maybe because I don't know.
Land of the Dead's fun.
I love it. First of all, it's like the most Toronto, I think, the most Toronto production you'll ever see. But even
Diary and Survival, like Diary is a pretty interesting. Survival's a full-on comedy, and I think
I saw that at TIFF. I think it was crazy.
It's a Hatfield-McCoy spoof comedy to some degree. Like the characters are serious, but the movie is not. And I think a part of the reason that wasn't well received was people were expecting a horror movie. He gave them a weird comedy western.
Horror comedy. I don't know how it makes. Money. I love to see it, but I know that it's a tricky one.
I mean, some of it does, but most of it.
Yeah, yeah. It's so tricky.
Between two stools is what they call that. It's not quite horror enough, and it's not quite comedy enough. It's both. If you don't have one of them dominating, like the ones that work, like Shaun of the Dead, all the comedy comes from the characters, and it's well written, and like that, you know, that punches way above its budget and its weight. Because the characters are so good, but when the horror happens, it's still serious horror. Like it's, you know, they lose their family members and the things, people are actually in danger. I think it's the winking stuff where it's just like they're swinging for the fences on trying to be funny, you know, where it's just a lot of jokes. That stuff usually doesn't work too well.
Yeah, it can't be funny on purpose in some ways. If it's funny like by accident, it could work.
If it's funny, it's usually funny on purpose, but telling a joke.
Yeah, I'm with you. So if you could direct... Or create an entry into like a franchise that's kind of over and done with. What would it be?
Critters movie, probably. They are. There was Critters Attack and the web series that's on Shudder.
Right, the web
series. I'm not going to talk about those so much. You know, Critters is hit and miss, but I think there's some real potential for a really, really, really good sequel there. Sequel, reboot, whatever the hell you want to call it. Just, I think what would make it work is if they're treated seriously, but they're still intelligent aliens. Oh, you haven't seen them, right? Okay. the thing about critters that makes them special to me is that they are highly intelligent aliens with a language, and they can talk to each other, and they can plan, and they can manipulate. They're like gremlins, but more intelligent. So they can manipulate tools. They fucking fly spaceships. So really, and the other side of it is there's bounty hunters in the movies that are shapeshifters that like try and take down the critters. So those two elements, if treated kind of seriously, could make a really cool movie, as long as you don't lose the charm of what these, of the puppets, of actually making, like, what they actually do.
What if they are like, okay, we're going to let you create a new Critters movie, but it has to be CGI. What would you do?
Not do it.
You wouldn't, come on, you wouldn't do it?
No.
Well, I hope
I want to make a movie that every horror film will hate.
Yeah, we will be mad.
I mean, the reality of it is I'm not really a mercenary. I'm still pretty early in my career, and I know it's dumb to say this, but there are certain things that you have to stick to your guns on. And if I know going into something that I'm going to make something that everybody's going to hate anyway, and it's just going to damage my career, why would I do it?
I'm with you. I'd like to say I'm the same way, but I have never seen, you know, like a big check before. So I feel like I don't know what I would do.
Well, I feel like it wouldn't be that big a check ultimately, because at the level you could get like in an ideal world, and it's an actual like solid budget. That's
one thing.
But like to get a Critters sequel done, it would probably be on the Sci-Fi Channel level.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You make decent money, but you know, it would be a year's wage, which is great. But then you got to live with it for the rest of your life. And I'm not saying that, I wouldn't do a Sci-Fi Channel.
Uh-huh. No Alan Smithy production.
No, well, no, I would, like, the actual productions have worked there. I've got no problems with them. It's more just, it's got to be the right project and the right approach to the project. Mm-hmm. And if it seems like, you know, well, every 10 minutes we need to have the CGI creature jump out. It's like, well, that's not story necessarily. That's a checklist. I would rather not do that kind of movie.
And you can smell that from a mile away when people are not passionate behind a project.
I don't want to just pump out a product. If I was ever involved in any of these franchises, you know, I would want it to be as good as it possibly could be.
Do you have any like specs that you've been sitting on that you may not be made and we can know about?
Not for franchises, no.
Okay.
Like the only stuff I've worked on is like of franchises or of other IPs that I don't own is that brief amount of time I was working on Day of the Dead. I worked on Coffin Joe. Which they were going to do a US remake. I can't talk about who was in it or any of that, but I was on that and drafting treatments and stuff like that, and back and forth with the producers for a while on that one. So were some other people I know that I'm not going to go into all the details there. And very, very briefly, we were involved in possibly producing a remake, an English language remake of Sergio Martino's Torso, which is an old Italian giallo film. That its Italian title is The Body Shows No Sign of Carnal Violence.
Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't involved in the script in that. Serena Whitney was, but we were working with the director's daughter, and we spent a good year back and forth on that one. And so those three properties are the only IPs that I don't own that I've ever like been involved with in any way. I guess briefly, I was trying to help get a Street Trash remake made, the original creators, and Matt Mandarides and stuff. But this is all... You know, projects come your way, you try and push them out to other places. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't have any, like, we don't have specs necessarily that I just wrote being like, oh, I would love to make a franchise movie, because it feels like a ton of work for something that you don't even know you can get the rights to or the possibility of it. And it's just like, there's other stuff too. Like the Mark of Cain obviously is based on a book we optioned the rights to. So we're
trying to... What was it? Sorry?
Mark of Cain. It's based on a book called Cain, written by Michael Prescott, originally published under his real name, Douglas Borton. But we've been trying to get that made for almost 5 years now, maybe longer than 5 years. Yeah, we optioned it in 2014. So,
oh God,
it is 6 years. Well, we were supposed to go to camera earlier this year, but I remember casting in January when COVID hit. It seemed like it was going. I don't know if it will.
Speaking of adaptations, like, do you have any fantasy adaptations?
Books, you mean?
Yeah, anything, really. But yeah, books specifically.
Yeah, I'd love to do Dean Koontz's Darkfall. I think that'd be a really fun movie.
What's that about?
So
I don't know that one.
I really like little monsters, I've said before. Darkfall is about a mob war, and one of the various factions is into voodoo and dark magic. They basically summon a bunch of these imp-sized demons to go and kill And it's an investigation thing because it's like these crime scenes are just insane and you have no idea why they're so fucked up. And then you realize it's all these little tiny fucking imp demons that just tear people apart.
It's the tiny demons that do the biggest damage. Yeah. Have you read Intensity? It's the only Jim Carrey.
Yeah, oh yeah, I've read it. There was a TV movie of Intensity. I think Stephen Dorff or Stephen Baldwin was in it, one of the two of them.
One of the Stevens? I just remember it being this very similar to the plot of High Tension, and I was really suspect.
It is. Darkfall for sure, and the other one is Dark Harvest, but that's being made by David Slade now. It's a great book, though. Hell of a book. We tried to get the rights.
All right. Well, this has been super fun. I feel like I've held on to you for way longer than I said that I would have.
Oh, well.
But I really appreciate you being our first guest and everything. Thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of the pandemic.
Okay. Oh, I will.
You will. Sweet. All right. Well, bye for now. Thank you so much for listening. And if you could do me a favor of subscribing and liking and telling a friend about this new podcast, that would be really cool. And I hope you keep listening, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Development Hell.